welcome to The Squeal, PIC's Swine Management Podcast, featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. Interest in biosecurity has zoomed worldwide in 2020. The U.S. Swine Universe has been researching and implementing BioSecure Protocol for some time now. Due to continued industry interest, we're reaching back to a valuable discussion of the concepts from an earlier Squeal feature with Dr. Joel Neerham of Pipestone Veterinary Services, Dr. Andrea Pitkin, and Dr. Jess Waddell, specialist with PIC's Health Assurance Team. This is part one of a three-part series on the Squeal.
My name is Joel Neerham. I'm a veterinarian with Pipestone Veterinary Services in Pipestone, Minnesota. Swine practitioner there. Prior to that, I was in mixed practice and also worked for an integrated pork producer for a period of time.
I'm Andrea Pitkin. I'm with PIC on the Health Assurance Veterinary Team. And previous experience, I was in practice for about 5.5 years in southern Minnesota before joining PIC. And prior to that, I got a master's degree which focused on biosecurity, so this is a very passionate topic for me.
Jess Waddell, also with PIC Health Assurance, based in Nebraska, was most recently with a large producer in Nebraska and western Iowa.
So a passion, Andrea, you said. What drove that?
Well, and ultimately, I would much rather prevent disease than have to deal with it. And I think that over the years, the work that's been done, we have really great protocols and processes and things that we can tailor to numerous situations, numerous farms, numerous people, as long as we follow the basic rules of the absolute do's and don'ts. I think that a lot of things can be prevented. You know, as far as disease breaks, we just have to have the want, the determination, the passion, if you will, to do so. And I think that getting that message out there to producers and farm owners is very important.
Let's create a definition of biosecurity on the fly. So somebody start off, what do you think is the key elements of biosecurity, and then others add in?
I think when most veterinarians, producers think of biosecurity as bioexclusion. So we're preventing any pathogen, any fomite from carrying a disease into your population of animals.
We'd often define it as just simply keeping disease out. And it's all the things that we do on a farm or even off the farm to prevent a new disease from entering a group of animals.
I think I would add to that that it's a mindset. I think you have lots of different protocols, but biosecurity, if anything, is more of a mindset. It's the determined desire to follow those protocols, whatever works for your farm, that you want to and are going to actively work to keep disease out.
I think it's almost a culture. Yeah. I think oftentimes it has to become part of the culture of a farm or of a team that works on a farm in order for it really to take on life and in order for it to happen day in, day out, because it's something that doesn't happen from 8 to 5. It has to be 24/7. It has to be on the weekends. It has to be on the holidays. It just has to be part of what we do every day. And it's often not convenient. The things that we're talking about that are going to prevent disease are not convenient, and that's why it has to be culture. It has to be just ingrained, I think.
So driving that culture, not necessarily in the barn, but into an operation where they've had some issues. We know it hits them in the pocketbook, but what causes that heart change that means, oh, we're going to have to change the way we do things rather than, doc, give us a shot?
Well, I think unfortunately the driver is when something happens. I think that they hear us say you need to follow this protocol and it's expensive and it's time consuming and it's inconvenient, but once a disease does come in and they know that it could have been prevented. It seems like, unfortunately, it's not until they get burned that it really starts to hit home. I wish it wasn't that way. But I think more often or not, in the experiences I've had, when people truly grasp onto biosecurity, it's because they've had an unfortunate event and now they're, I mean, not necessarily backpedaling, but trying to re-correct what went wrong.
I think it's it starts just when everybody is on the boat and rowing in the same direction, and it can't work with just the barn personnel. It's maintenance and the veterinary staff. It's the owners. All of the above rowing in the same direction and committed, because as Dr. Neerham said, it's not convenient.
As was said earlier, it's a mindset, and I think it's a mindset by everyone involved that this is my farm. I'm taking ownership of this farm, and so what would the owner do? How would the owner work to protect their herd? It's my herd too, and so that's one of the things I think that when a farm manager and when the staff really take ownership of the farm, they won't let anybody do something that goes against the biosecurity protocol, if you will, because they know of the risk that it presents to the animals in their care. And so really, until people buy in and absolutely take ownership, I don't know that we get the full value of the protocols that we put in place to protect the farm.
And some of our other topics, we've talked about sometimes people are afraid to speak out. So in this type of a biosecurity discussion, instructing each other, teaching each other, making sure that they realize that it's a mindset, but because one failure is total failure.
It's clearly defining the processes so everybody knows the boundaries, exactly what that protocol means, allowing them to have input to make it as convenient as possible but still serve the purpose. Really drives that point. So everybody knows the rules so they can call each other out, one. And there's different methods you can have those reporting. But the culture, biosecurity culture, extends to the barn staff. I mean, if they've got a manager that is working with them and it's not a dictatorship, they can push that information up and down and sideways, and everybody knows the why they're doing it, why they're doing those processes, and it's to make their job easier in the long run.
I think there's a really delicate balance when it comes to compliance with respect to biosecurity, and to your point about making sure that people speak up when something is wrong, because everyone on the farm is accountable to follow the protocols, and so there has to be some accountability. You have to sort of hold people's feet to the fire in some ways. But you also have to have a mechanism where people aren't afraid to step up and say, hey, something happened that shouldn't have happened, so that we can fix it, right? Or so that we can react to prevent the worst case scenario, if that makes any sense. But it's a really delicate balance. I don't know that there's a prescribed way to have that happen. I think it goes back to the culture of the organization and just trying to get people to own it.
I think what can help with that is a good biosecurity protocol will have one layer, maybe two. A really good biosecurity protocol will have three, if not four, layers. And so when you have a protocol, let's say that it has to have four sets of failures before you have the break, you can make a failure in one of those, and then that creates a teaching moment. And so I think that we need to do a better job of, when we talk to personnel and owners, that this is a protocol that we want to put in place. It has various fail-stop mechanisms or processes throughout it. And then that way, then we communicate that onto the farm staff and say, look, we don't want you to make mistakes, but know that maybe here in this one step or that step, we still have a chance to rectify the situation. And I think that that's really important for them to understand. I'm stealing this line from Dr. Jared Geiger that works with us. He is constantly trying to remind us, you have to do first why, then how. Why are we doing this? And I think that that is absolutely key when it comes to biosecurity. Because if I tell you, you gotta jump on one foot and rub your belly to go through this process of biosecurity, you're gonna look at me like I have three heads. But if I say, well, if you do this, this is why it's going to prevent disease, and they can't hear the jump on one foot. They have to hear, if you step here and you put boots on here, this is going to prevent disease crossing this point in the farm.
I think Dr. Pitkin makes a great point in that today there's so much science that's gone into developing the protocols that we have, and I'm the only one with gray hair here, so I remember the time before a lot of that work was done, and we would tell people, well, you need to do this, this, and this. And it was like, well, why do you do it? Well, because I said so. But I had nothing to back me up, no data, no research that was done that said, yeah, this really does work. And so in the last 12 to 15 years, there have been a number of really smart people in our industry, and Dr. Pitkin actually worked on some projects that proved some of these protocols work. And so I think that's a key today, that we can point to that research to show people, hey, there's a reason why we're asking you to do this. It's not because we pulled it out of the air and it sounded really good, because that's what they did 20 years ago. But today we've got good data, and I think that helps sort of explain it or drive that message. So,
Dr. Pitkin, you said you called it layering, and I think I know what you're referring to, but give us a for instance. How might that look?
Yeah. An easy example is farm entry. So typically, you pull up to a farm if you have a designated farm staff parking lot versus a visitor parking lot. So you're creating separation there. You have a designated path. You have people walk to come into the farm. You might have a shoe cover policy when exiting your vehicle. When you first enter the building proper, you're on what we call a dirty side entry. And that's usually got a good source of heat. It's kept clean. It's routinely disinfected. You drop your shoes there after crossing over a bench, and we have very deliberate bench crossing protocols where you don't let your socks touch the dirty side of the floor when you swing your legs over. And now you go into a dirty side of the shower, and you know, all your personal items are removed, you shower, you come in. So that's a good example of, you could have one of those processes potentially fail. Hopefully it's sooner than later in that process, but that's the idea of generating layers to a personnel entry protocol, for example, and you know, get clean, dirty lines are another example of that, where you set that and where people can and can't cross. So those really have to be tailored to the farm and to the people, and get their input on how is this going to work for you, and how can we make this efficient, and where can we set these, but we know that at this point is an absolute, so to speak.
I've often heard that described as redundancy, another way of saying layers. Someone way smarter than me said that one time. It stuck. It's like, yeah, we need to have redundant interventions. Exactly what you described was layers. So that if one fails, yeah.
Dr. Waddell mentioned a little while ago fomite, which, you know, makes us all think of Dr. D's fomites from hell studies that really kind of opened the curtain on a lot of these. Dr. Pitkin mentions the transportation, bringing in as we actually enter the barn to work. What are some of the other vectors you've seen deliver the bug to the wrong side of the line?
The most efficient way to move a pig disease is with another pig. And so making sure that you have the right testing protocols and the right quarantine protocols for breeding stock, particularly when you're thinking about a sow farm operation, we often overlook that, but there was a time when we didn't quarantine well and we didn't test well. And I think whenever we start talking about biosecurity, I would start with the pig or with the semen. Those, you know, biological vectors that can bring a disease, and then we get to fomites, and we start talking about disinfection and downtime and some of those kinds of things, making sure that your source of anything that you're bringing to the farm is verified as a clean source. Sanitation is always a critical point when we talk about biosecurity, particularly at any point where you're going to bring something from outside the farm across the clean, dirty line and into the farm. Those points need to be very well controlled. They need to be very clean, and the processes need to be simple and understood.
Yeah, the fomite piece is everything under the sun that goes into the farm. It's as basic as the pigs, the people, the feed, and the supplies. And if you really start to think about how many times we do cross over the clean, dirty lines or those critical control points, it's really staggering, from people to lunches to supplies to semen. And there's a lot of points throughout the day that we can mess that up and present a risk to our farms.
I would say that there needs to be a process that's followed anytime we bring something across that line into the farm, without exception. There needs to be a process that's been verified as effective, sort of getting back to the research that's been done, and there's been a lot of work that's been done. The other thing I think that's important is that there can't be exceptions. Nobody is above the law, if you will, when it comes to biosecurity. And I used to tell farm managers, I don't care if the owner shows up and tries to break biosecurity, your job is to hold them accountable, because nobody is above the law. Nobody, and that is the thing that will erode biosecurity compliance and biosecurity culture the fastest, is if there are certain people that the biosecurity rules don't apply to. Because if that's the case, then the people that are on the farm every day will understand, it must not be that important if they don't have to follow it, so when no one's looking, I shouldn't have to either. And so I think that's one of the most critical things. Every person that comes to the farm has to follow all the rules all the time without exception.
Yeah, completely agree. And to your question about, you know, what things bring disease to a site, I mean, absolutely 100% agree with Dr. Nurum that your pig coming in or your semen coming in is your most easy vector, because that's what's carrying the disease. So I think something to point out is all the things that can bring disease, whether it's people entry, fomites, transportation, manure hauling, mortality, removals, all those different things, people have to do those processes and procedures. So I really think that, you know, getting people educated, but getting people to understand the why and the how, it's, you know, you can say it was a dirty trailer. Well, who didn't clean the trailer properly? Who crossed the clean, dirty line? You could say it was a fomite. Well, where did that fomite get left? Or how did that fomite get transported? There's, I guess, probably with the exception of aerosol, and maybe a little bit if a pig gets infected, people touch all of these processes, and they are critical to train and educate and understand.
Joining us on The Squeal today for part one of this three-part series were Pipestone's Dr. Joel Nerum, along with PIC's Drs. Jess Waddell and Andrea Pitkin, discussing biosecurity concepts. Whether you're tuning in for the first time or you're a longtime listener, take a second to subscribe to The Squeal. It's the easiest way to stay up to date with the latest podcast episodes. Just search for The Squeal wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're already a subscriber, visit phone settings and turn notifications on so you'll never miss an episode. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.